once you had a glimpse, there's no way to go back. Raise yourself, it's because you go forever on my neck. Forever on my neck.
Hasta la pasta, everyone. That was our show's theme by Johnny Lancia. I am your host, Daniel Kurland, and this is Big Zuko's Forever Almanac, a chronicle of reminiscences. I'm sorry, did I sound curt just then? Passionless and laconic? Well, my friends, and if this is your first time listening, I apologize for the boundary jumping by referring to you as friend. Why, we're strangers at best at this point. But I'm afraid that hubris got the better of me, and much like Icarus, I got too close to that wax factory with my flamethrower and wound up with what? That's right, a puddle of melted wax. A good-for-nothing puddle of melted wax! I'll explain. I was having some drinks at Houtini's, going through the Forever Almanac. I'm not particularly a fan of vodka, but their special on Wednesday was dollar abrica vodka shots, so when in Rome. A little later, a very attractive lady approached me. I won't tell you her name for privacy purposes, but why don't we call her Sarah? Oh, interesting fact, Sarah's family also owned the Livingston Construction Company. Sarah asked if I was who she thought I was, and I said that I was that was. She said that she was a fan of the podcast and if I'd be interested in going back to her place. She lived nearby. Now, normally I'd have some reservations set up, suspicious that this might be some kind of Zuko thief trying to take the book out from under my nose. But I had a few drinks in me and Sarah had legs that went all the way down to the floor. So I drunkenly hollered out, "Check, please." Sarah laughed and I thought, gee, my penis might actually get some company tonight. Upon reaching Sarah's, we were greeted at the door by her roommate, Ashley Brown. That's her actual name, but that's such a common name that you wouldn't know which Ashley Brown it is, so whatever. Ashley was stunning, though. I mean, Sarah was stunning, but Ashley had legs that didn't just go all the way down to the floor. They went right through the floor. We all chatted for a bit, had more drinks, and Ashley seemed to be liking me enough. And my goal was no longer to sleep with Sarah, but to turn the night into some roommate threesome of debauchery. They didn't take to that. At all. They pretty much immediately pushed me out of their place and kept my jacket I had brought with me, which normally wouldn't be a big deal, but this was a particularly nice jacket, and I had already been calling it in my head my threesome jacket, so, if I may, Sarah of Livingston Construction and Ashley Brown, I am sorry. But the lesson here is that greed is a dangerous force, and upon my searchings through the Forever Almanac, I found that it struck Big Zuko in a very disastrous way at one of the earliest points in his career. For there was a time when Bic was struggling to write anywhere. He had mounting bills to pay and was struggling to make rent, so, in spite of having almost no interest in the medium of comic books, when he found himself given the opportunity to write an issue of Batman Comics, which, by chance, would have ended up to be the 500th issue, immediately following the story arc where Batman's back is broken by Bane. The comic itself is not included in the almanac, obviously, but Zuko has outlined a very detailed rough draft of what would happen in Batman number 500, titled For Whom the Bell Stalls, which deals with the one-shot antagonist that Zuko created known as Wubzocalypse, and was wildly different in the fact that Batman is barely in the issue, with the bulk of it being spent fleshing out this new villain. This is Big Zuko's rough draft, For Whom the Bell Stalls. Wogan So Calypso tinkered with the latest toy he was working on, a futuristic ray gun. He was just about to complete a circuit when a loud wheezing cut through the air, causing Wogan to fumble the precise circuitry. The wheezing continued and he set down his tools, knowing that he wouldn't be getting any more work done this evening. He entered his bedroom, finding his wife Muriel, the source of the wheezing, looking pale as a sheet. Muriel struggled out a false smile and reached for Wogan, but he quickly prevented her from using any more strength than needed. It was the super flu. It hadn't hurt everyone the same way. Hell, Wogan himself was somehow immune to it, but Muriel was just not getting better. She needed her medicine, the vaccine. They couldn't afford it. Wogan's toy maker job hardly raking in the dollars, but she needed her medicine, and Muriel would get her medicine. Wogan kissed his wife on the forehead, told her he loved her, and set out into the night. With no vehicle of his own, the Gotham City bus was Wogan's only option to get to the pharmacy. And it was late. Going on 6 minutes now.
Why even have a schedule if you're not going to keep it?
Wogan would bark into the night. He was well on his way to pacing a trench into the ground when the bus eventually pulled up. Was this all some cruel joke, though? On the bus, people were moving even slower and more lethargic. The bus driver sluggishly driving at the exact speed limit, and at times even dipping under it. It was at these moments that Wogan felt himself going mad the most. But the passengers were even worse, ringing the bell for every stop and trudging to the exits as if their pockets full of lead. It had been 15 minutes and they'd only moved 3 blocks. Wogan's grip onto the steel handrailing getting tighter and tighter and tighter until they finally reached the pharmacy.
Here's her prescription. Quickly, please.
Wogan slammed the prescription and a swath of credit cards onto the counter, his hand tapping incessantly near the edge, the tapping subtly making the cards bounce and titter. But here it was no different. The pharmacist squinted at labels and clicked wrong buttons, and eternity played out before Wogan. Wogan didn't care that the pharmacist even took a phone call in the middle of it all, because during it, he thought of the roof collapsing down on her. Her body getting crushed and mangled because she couldn't operate at a reasonable pace. Wogan, in time, got the vaccine and ran out of the building, trying to catch up on any lost time, no matter how slight. No chances were going to be taken with that time devourer of a bus again, moving slower than a paraplegic with peanut butter on their wheels. Wogan was already concerned with how long he'd been taking. He hailed a cab, giving his address, before the vehicle had even come to a stop, and off they went. He would have been better off walking. The driver seemed to have no idea where he was going, with Wogan constantly telling him to take alternate routes so the entire trip wouldn't be a waste. The driver continually looking at his checkered cap in the rearview mirror, adjusting it to the perfect slant, and combing his fingers through his mustache every half a minute, almost as if to confirm that it was still there. While the two of them were stuck behind a particularly bad holdup of traffic and the driver attempted the move, Wogan even shouted out,
"You've still got your fucking stash, buddy! Get me home!"
When they finally got there, Wogan didn't even want to look at the time. He was so upset. He paid the driver, getting a condescending glance when he didn't include a tip, but Wogan didn't have time to deal with the jackassery of man. He had to help his wife. Wogan bolted up the stairs, immediately heading for the bedroom, but he could have spent all the time in the world arguing with the taxi driver. It wouldn't have made a difference. His wife was dead. Muriel lied limp on the bed, and Wogan started erupting in laughter, it tearing through his lungs and spilling out of his wide-open maw, almost choking on it. And in his snapping-apart brain, Wogan wondered if she had passed away while he was at the pharmacy or during the ride home. The next few weeks were very draining on Mr. Socalypso. He spent all of his time working on his toy guns in his home. Actually, it was just one gun he was working on. All of his time was funneled into this solitary gun. He'd also removed all the clocks and timepieces from his home. Even the LED clocks on VCRs and ovens had been smashed or scrawled out. At times he would still hear Muriel wheezing and momentarily stop his work. Even his own mind was trying to slow him down now. But he finished. When morning came, Wogan had finished, having no idea how much time he'd spent on this project. It could have been months, and he wouldn't know. Wouldn't have cared, because now it was time to fix things. Wogan left his house wearing just a bathrobe and slippers, the ray gun tucked into his belt of the robe. A weird clash of technology and comfortitude. He called the cab, got inside, and nearly whispered,
"Gotham Observation Tower."
"Oh, beautiful view up there, pal. Just beautiful."
The driver adjusted his checkered cap.
Say, hope you don't mind me asking, but, aren't you a little underdressed?"
He ran his fingers through his mustache as he finished the question. It was a bit fuller than the last time Wogan saw the man, but he knew it was him. It was hard for Wogan. He wanted to attack the insolent snail of a man right away, but he clenched his fist, chewed his cheek, and bided his time. Just a little longer. His finger running circles around the trigger of the gun, moving up and down the slick red instrument.
"Here we are," Gotham Tower.
Without a moment wasted, Wogan pulled out the gun and fired it at the driver's face. It didn't explode, or disintegrate, or even change in the slightest, but his actions became incredibly slowed down. His body reduced to moving only fractions of inches. Wogan let out a smirk over his success, grabbed the driver around the neck, and snapped the thing nearly completely backwards. The driver trapped in such stasis that the look of surprise on his face didn't even have time to register. Wogan got out and entered the building, his aqua slippers making no noise as they moved across the tiled floor. Wogan, of course, stood out, but he moved at such a brisk pace that by the time anyone had a chance to take a second glance at what was happening, he was already gone. He got in the elevator, pushed 47, and meekly hummed to himself "The Farmer in the Dell" as the elevator rocketed to the top floor. The doors rung and separated, and Wogan leisurely walked outside. There was no one else up on the top floor, which offered a gorgeous view of all of Gotham, which somewhat surprised Wogan. It was still early, but not that early. He supposed that people were just caught up living their lives.
"Not for long," he muttered.
Wogan strode out to the edge of the tower, dangling one of his legs over it, his slipper almost falling off his foot and plummeting below. He then unholstered his gun and pointed it down, trained on all of Gotham.
I am Wobzocalypse, and let the Wobzocalypse begin!
Wogan screamed, abandoning his former life and succumbing to his newly found persona, and with that, he fired the gun. He fired the ray gun down at Gotham City, then, content with the work he had done, proceeded to drop the gun off the edge of the tower, it no longer serving a purpose for him. As Wobzocalypse descended down the elevator, what was before humming was now a cascading song of delight.
"The farmer in the dell, the farmer in the dell, hi-ho the derry-o, the farmer in the dell."
Wobzocalypse got outside, seeing a red smudge mixed with tiny veins of wires on the side of the road that could only be the remnants of the dropped ray gun, and he took a look at the world around him, the world that he had created. Gotham was still full of people, all of them going about their day as they normally would, only it was impossible to tell because every single thing was moving extremely slow. The gun that Wobzocalypse had created infected everyone with super malaise, making it near impossible for them to move at all, a term also known as becoming Wubsy. As Wobzocalypse reached the crowd of near-frozen people, he pushed a man in a wheelchair out of his way, tumbling him to the ground.
"Good riddance to bad wheelchairs!"
Wobzocalypse reached into his bathrobe, brandishing a concealed knife. He pulled his arm back and then let the marathon stab session begin. His blade flew from one body into another, his wrist constantly pumping in order to produce as many stabs as possible in these lifeless bodies. He pounced from one stranger to the next, the expression of pain on their faces finally registering after he had moved on to several bodies past them, their feelings and actions now transformed into echoes.
"Take all the time you want, guys! Now you've got all the time in the world!"
Wobzocalypse now straddled a body on the sidewalk, repeatedly stabbing him, his wife and children watching the entire thing, their arms very, very, very slowly reaching out to stop him.
"All the time you want to drag your feet and lollygag and diddle daddle while you hold up other people's days."
There were now close to a dozen bloodied bodies littering the outside of Gotham Tower, but Wobzocalypse seemed far from finished. He leaped knife first into a woman, knocking her to the earth.
"Where's that spring in your step?"
Stab.
"Where's that fire under your feet now?"
Stab. But then in the wake of all of this ruckus, Wobzocalypse noticed that the skirt of the woman that he was on top of had gotten hiked up. He saw a flash of her simple underwear showing, but that was all it took. His hand dipped below her waist, the rustling of his bathrobe, her still awake eyes staring through the entire thing. Through their gyrations and motions, Wobzocalypse even saw his own dead wife's face on the stranger's, and even moaned out,
"Muriel?"
a few times as well. This was not Wobzocalypse's plan, but he had had a taste of it, and he liked it. Surely it being a mix of the need for power with the absence of his wife, rather than any actual want for inflicting sexual abuse, but it was added to his repertoire, or rather, perhaps, rapetoire would be more appropriate. Flinging himself from one body to the next, stabbing with knife and phallus in perfect unison, he had won. He had shown the world his point. But right before he was about to stab a construction worker in his slow-moving face, Something dark and metallic collided with Webzocalypse's wrist, knocking the blade away.
That's quite enough, Webzocalypse. Or should I say, Wogan So Calypso.
It was Batman, albeit confined to a wheelchair after his encounter with Bane, see Batman number 497, but Batman all the same, and he was moving at a perfectly normal speed.
Impossible! The caped cripple! How have you survived the Webzocalypse?
Because I am better than you, Wogan. You fight a coward's war.
Batman didn't need to tell Webzocalypse that the rays of his super malaise gun couldn't penetrate through the dense minerals that make up the walls of the Batcave. His game was to intimidate the villain, and that was what was happening. Webzocalypse kicked the nearby bodies aside, setting clear a path to attack the Batman. He remained unaffected by the ray gun, but Webzocalypse still had the non-crippled advantage. But just as he was gearing up and ready to channel all of his pent-up rage and remorse towards the superhero, Batman did a very simple thing. He took out a mirror. Webzocalypse locked eyes with himself, staring down his own reflection, but his bile not seeming to let up. Never abandoning eye contact with himself, his hands searched the cold ground for his weapon, his security blanket. When he eventually found it, returning it to the comfortable enclosure of his fist, he could have sworn Batman said,
"Good."
What happened next, though, happened all too quickly. He might not have been moving as fast as he seemed, it might have been the contrast to the ebbing world around him, but Webzocalypse's limbs flew and flung in a frenzy, inflicting stabs upon stabs all over himself, and while it was hard to tell through the blur of it all and Batman having an obscured view behind the mirror, he could have sworn that Webzocalypse stayed true to his modus operandi, and once the stabbing was complete, finished the job by raping himself to death. His aqua slipper is now an over-ripened shade of purple as they mixed with his fleeting blood, and instead of spending his final moments thinking about his lost Muriel, he just focused on the fact that if he hadn't destroyed his gun, then maybe he could have slowed down his bleeding. As Batman wheeled away, he dropped the mirror on the ground, shattering it, and rather than worrying about the bad luck that would follow, he said to himself,
"You've already broken my back. Give me your worst."
Now, that's the end of Zuko's original comic dealing with Webzocalypse, but far from the end of his involvement with the character. No, this foray into the pulp medium only opened more doors for Zuko and his outlandish villain. To begin with, the comic itself almost immediately went out of print due to not only the extremely graphic subject matter, but also for the countless slurs towards the crippled, almost as if Zuko had some personal vendetta with the sect of people. Accordingly, the comic is extremely rare and out of print. In spite of all of that, the impressive 90s animated Batman cartoon decided to take on the character of Webzocalypse for an episode, and often decided to dance with the darker side of those characters, happened to even do Webzocalypse justice. The episode itself, unfortunately, was at first preempted and then inevitably never aired, and in a surprising move by fans of the series, the episode is also not included on the DVD release due to its subject matter. When the studio was asked for comment, they responded, "We are done with that character. We do not want to remember that character." Paul Rubens was the voice of Wogan So Calypso, or Webzocalypse, but he'll deny any association to the topic. What was perhaps the most surprising move, Tim Burton, apparently a fan of both the comic and the cartoon, wanted Webzocalypse to be the villain in his third Batman feature, Batman Remains. Burton had cast Dom DeLuise in the role, and the deeper the two of them got into the character, the more they kept getting absorbed by it. So, it was not surprising that when Burton received a petition with 1 million signatures requesting that he change his Batman movie featuring Webzocalypse into an entirely Webzocalypse-based movie, he immediately shut down production on Batman Remains and began pre-production on Webzocalypse Now. Unfortunately, matters didn't get much further when it was revealed that Zuko himself had done all 1 million of the signatures on the petition. With all the shame now associated with the creator and the property, and the fact that the main character's name hinged on the term Wubsy being used for lazy and lethargic, a term that is wildly unknown to 98% of the population, Burton halted production on that, salvaging what he could, and could later turn it into Mars Attacks. While Mars Attacks didn't open any doors for Burton, not that he needed any at that point, Zuko could have seen the healthy success of one of his characters in First Creations, but he got shot by the super malaise ray of greed and ended up as a footnote in the DC annals. So, appreciate what you have, listeners. live life to the fullest, and don't get stabbed to death by a heartbroken toy maker. If you can do that, and I can do that, well, then I think we'll all be okay. And until next time, the Chronicle is chroniclosed.
Once you had a glimpse, there's no way to go back. Raise yourself, it's big to go forever on my neck. Forever on my neck.